Besides, my mom's pregnant. I'm going to have a baby sister. I'd like to be around to get to know her. Well, I understand that. I remember when Artemis was born. Aren't you twins? I've always regarded her as my little sister. Percy's mouth twitched. Anyway, my mom's got that going on, and her first novel is going to be published this spring as well. So I'd like to stay alive long enough to... Wonderful, I said. Remind her to burn the proper sacrifices. Calliope is quite touchy when novelists forget to thank her. Okay, but what I'm saying... I can't go off on another world-stomping quest. I can't do that to my family. Percy glanced toward his window. On the sill was a potted plant with delicate silver leaves, possibly moonlace. I've already given my mom enough heart attacks for one lifetime. She's just about forgiven me for disappearing last year, but I swore to her and Paul that I wouldn't do anything like that again.
Paul?
My stepdad. He's at a teacher in-service today. He's a good guy. I see. In truth, I didn't see. I wanted to get back to talking about my problems. I was impatient with Percy for turning the conversation to himself. Sadly, I have found this sort of self-centeredness common among demigods. You do understand that I must find a way to return to Olympus, I said. This will probably involve many harrowing trials with a high chance of death. Can you turn down such glory? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I can. Sorry. I pursed my lips. It always disappointed me when mortals put themselves first and failed to see the big picture, the importance of putting me first. But I had to remind myself that this young man had helped me out on many previous occasions. He had earned my goodwill. I understand, I said with incredible generosity. You will at least escort us to Camp Half-Blood. That I can do. Percy reached into his hoodie pocket and pulled out a ballpoint pen. For a moment, I thought he wanted my autograph. I can't tell you how often that happens. Then I remembered the pen was the disguised form of his sword, Riptide. He smiled, and some of that old demigod mischief twinkled in his eyes. Let's see if Meg's ready for a field trip. Chapter 5 Seven-Layer Dip Chocolate Chip Cookies in Blue. I love this woman. Sally Jackson was a witch to rival Cersei. She had transformed Meg from a street urchin into a shockingly pretty young girl. Meg's dark, pageboy hair was glossy and brushed. Her round face was scrubbed clean of grime. Her cat-eye glasses had been polished so the rhinestones sparkled. She had evidently insisted on keeping her old red sneakers, but she wore new black leggings and a knee-length frock of shifting green hues. Mrs. Jackson had figured out how to keep Meg's old look, but tweak it to be more complimentary. Meg now had an elfish springtime aura that reminded me very much of a dryad. In fact, a sudden wave of emotion overwhelmed me. I choked back a sob. Meg pouted.
Do I look that bad?
No, no, I managed. It's just... I wanted to say, you remind me of someone. But I didn't dare open that line of conversation. Only two mortals ever had broken my heart. Even after so many centuries, I couldn't think of her. Couldn't say her name without falling into despair. Don't misunderstand me. I felt no attraction to Meg. I was 16. Or 4,000 plus, depending on how you looked at it. She was a very young 12. But the way she appeared now, Meg McCaffrey might have been the daughter of my former love. If my former love had lived long enough to have children. It was too painful. I looked away. Well, Sally Jackson said with forced cheerfulness, how about I make some lunch while you three talk. She gave Percy a worried glance, then headed to the kitchen, her hands protectively over her pregnant belly. Meg sat on the edge of the sofa.
Percy, your mom is so normal.
Thanks, I guess.
He picked up a stack of test preparation manuals from the coffee table and chucked them aside.
I see you like to study, I said. Well done.
Percy snorted.
I hate to study.
I've been guaranteed admission with a full scholarship to New Rome University. But they're still requiring me to pass all my high school courses and score well on the SAT.
Can you believe that? Not to mention I have to pass the D-stomp.
The what?
Meg asked. An exam for Roman demigods, I told her. The demigod standard test of mad powers. Percy frowned.
That's what it stands for?
I should know. I wrote the music and poetry analysis sections.
I will never forgive you for that, Percy said.
Meg swung her feet.
So you're really a demigod? Like me?
Afraid so.
Percy sank into the armchair, leaving me to take the sofa next to Meg. My dad is the godly one. Poseidon. What about your parents? Meg's legs went still. She studied her chewed cuticles, the matching crescent rings glinting on her middle fingers.
Never knew them. Much.
Percy hesitated.
Foster home? Step-parents?
I thought of a certain plant, the Mimosa pudica, which the god Pan created. As soon as its leaves are touched, the plant closes up defensively. Meg seemed to be playing Mimosa, folding inward under Percy's questions. Percy raised his hands.
Sorry, didn't mean to pry.
He gave me an inquisitive look.
So how did you guys meet?
I told him the story. I may have exaggerated my brave defense against Cade and Mikey, just for narrative effect, you understand. As I finished, Sally Jackson returned. She set down a bowl of tortilla chips and a casserole dish filled with elaborate dip in multicolored strata, like sedimentary rock.
I'll be back with the sandwiches, she said, but I had some leftover seven-layer dip.
Yum.
Percy dug in with a tortilla chip.
She's kind of famous for this, guys.
Sally ruffled his hair.
There's guacamole, sour cream, refried beans, salsa.
Seven layers. I looked up in wonder.
You knew seven is my sacred number. You invented this for me?
Sally wiped her hands on her apron.
Well, actually, I can't take credit.
You are too modest. I tried some of the dip. It tasted almost as good as ambrosia nachos.
You will have immortal fame for this, Sally Jackson.
That's sweet.
She pointed to the kitchen.
I'll be right back.
Soon we were plowing through turkey sandwiches, chips and dip, and banana smoothies. Meg ate like a chipmunk, shoving more food in her mouth than she could possibly chew. My belly was full. I had never been so happy. I had a strange desire to fire up an Xbox and play Call of Duty.
Percy,
I said,
your mom is awesome.
I know, right?
He finished his smoothie. So, back to your story. You have to be Meg's servant now?
You guys barely know each other.
Barely is generous, I said. Nevertheless, yes, my fate is now linked with young McCaffrey.
We are cooperating, Meg said.
She seemed to savor that word. From his pocket, Percy fished his ballpoint pen. He tapped it thoughtfully against his knee.
And this whole turning into a mortal thing, you've done it twice before?
Not by choice, I assured him. The first time we had a little rebellion in Olympus. We tried to overthrow Zeus.
Percy winced. I'm guessing that didn't go well.
I got most of the blame, naturally. Oh,
and your father, Poseidon. We were both cast down to earth as mortals, forced to serve Laomedon, the king of Troy. He was a harsh master. He even refused to pay us for our work. Meg nearly choked on her sandwich.
I have to pay you?
I had a terrifying image of Meg McCaffrey trying to pay me in bottle caps, marbles, and pieces of colored string. Never fear, I told her. I won't be presenting you with the bill. But, as I was saying, the second time I became mortal, Zeus got mad because I killed some of his Cyclopes. Percy frowned. Dude, not cool. My brother is a Cyclops.
These were wicked Cyclopes. They made the lightning bolt that killed one of my sons.
Meg bounced on the arm of the sofa.
Percy's brother is a Cyclops? That's crazy.
I took a deep breath, trying to find my happy place. At any rate, I was bound to Admetus, the king of Thessaly. He was a kind master. I liked him so much I made all his cows have twin calves.
Can I have baby cows? Meg asked.
Well, Meg, I said, first you would have to have some mommy cows.
You see, guys,
Percy interrupted.
So, just to recap, you have to be Meg's servant for...
Some unknown amount of time, I said. Probably a year. Possibly more. And during that time? I will undoubtedly face many trials and hardships.
Like getting me my cows, Meg said.
I gritted my teeth. What those trials will be, I do not yet know. But if I suffer through them and prove I am worthy, Zeus will forgive me and allow me to become a god again. Percy did not look convinced. Probably because I did not sound convincing. I had to believe my immortal punishment was temporary, as it had been the last two times. Yet Zeus had created a strict rule for baseball and prison sentences. Three strikes, you're out. I could only hope this would not apply to me. I need time to get my bearings, I said. Once we get to Camp Half-Blood, I can consult with Chiron. I can figure out which of my godly powers remain with me in this mortal form. If any, Percy said. Let's think positive. Percy sat back in his armchair. Any idea what kind of spirits are following you?
Shiny blobs, Meg said. They were shiny and sort of blobby.
Percy nodded gravely. Those are the worst kind. It hardly matters, I said. Whatever they are, we have to flee. Once we reach camp, the magical borders will protect me.
And me?
Meg asked. Oh, yes. You too. Percy frowned. Apollo, if you're really mortal, like 100% mortal, can you even get into Camp Half-Blood? The seven-layer dip began to churn in my stomach. Please don't say that. Of course I'll get in. I have to. But you could get hurt in battle now, Percy mused. And again, maybe monsters would ignore you because you're not important.
Stop.
My hands trembled. Being immortal was traumatic enough. The thought of being barred from camp, of being unimportant. No, that simply could not be. I'm sure I've retained some powers, I said. I'm still gorgeous, for instance. If I could just get rid of this acne and lose some flab. I must have other abilities. Percy turned to Meg. What about you? I hear you throw a mean garbage bag. Any other skills we should know about? Summoning lightning? Making toilets explode? Meg smiled hesitantly.
That's not a power.
Sure it is, Percy said. Some of the best demigods have gotten their start by blowing up toilets. Meg giggled. I did not like the way she was grinning at Percy. I didn't want the girl to develop a crush. We might never get out of here. As much as I enjoyed Sally Jackson's cooking, The divine smell of baking cookies was even now wafting from the kitchen. I needed to make haste to camp.
Ahem. I rubbed my hands. How soon can we leave?
Percy glanced at the wall clock.
Right now, I guess.
If you're being followed, I'd rather have monsters on our trail than sniffing around the apartment.
Good man, I said.
Percy gestured with distaste at his test manuals. I just have to be back tonight. Got a lot of studying. The first two times I took the SAT, ugh. If it wasn't for Annabeth helping me out...
Who's that?
Meg asked.
My girlfriend.
Meg frowned. I was glad there were no garbage bags nearby for her to throw.
So take a break, I urged. Your brain will be refreshed after an easy drive to Long Island.
Huh, Percy said. There's a lazy kind of logic to that.
Okay, let's do it.
He rose just as Sally Jackson walked in with a plate of fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies. For some reason, the cookies were blue, but they smelled heavenly. And I should know. I'm from heaven.
Mom, don't freak, Percy said.
Sally sighed.
I hate it when you say that.
I'm just going to take these two to camp. That's all. I'll be right back.
I think I've heard that before. I promise.
Sally looked at me, then Meg. Her expression softened, her innate kindness perhaps overweighing her concern.
All right.
Be careful. It was lovely meeting you both. Please try not to die. Percy kissed her on the cheek. He reached for the cookies, but she moved the plate away.
Oh, no, she said. Apollo and Meg can have one. But I'm keeping the rest hostage until you're back safely. And hurry, dear. It would be a shame if Paul ate them all when he gets home.
Percy's expression turned grim. He faced us.
You hear that, guys? A batch of cookies is depending on me. If you get me killed on the way to camp, I am going to be ticked off.
Chapter 6 Aquaman driving. Couldn't possibly be worse. Oh, wait. Now it is. Much to my disappointment, the Jacksons did not have a spare bow or quiver to lend me.
I suck at archery, Percy explained.
Yes, but I don't, I said.
This is why you should always plan for my needs.
Sally lent Meg and me some proper winter fleece jackets, however. Mine was blue, with the word Blowfist written inside the neckline. Perhaps that was an arcane ward against evil spirits. Hecate would have known. Sorcery really wasn't my thing. Once we reached the Prius, Meg called Shotgun, which was yet another example of my unfair existence. Gods do not ride in the back. I again suggested following them in a Maserati or a Lamborghini, but Percy admitted he had neither. The Prius was the only car his family owned. I mean, wow. Just wow. Sitting in the back seat, I quickly became carsick. I was used to driving my Sun Chariot across the sky, where every lane was the fast lane. I was not used to the Long Island Expressway. Believe me, even at midday, in the middle of January, there is nothing express about your expressways. Percy braked and lurched forward. I sorely wished I could launch a fireball in front of us and melt cars to make way for our clearly more important journey.
Doesn't your Prius have flamethrowers? I demanded.
Lasers. At least some Hephaestian bumper blades. What sort of cheap economy vehicle is this? Percy glanced in the rearview mirror. You have rides like that on Mount Olympus?
We don't have traffic jams, I said. That I can promise you.
Meg tugged at her crescent moon rings. Again, I wondered if she had some connection to Artemis. The moon was my sister's symbol. Perhaps Artemis had sent Meg to look after me? Yet that didn't seem right. Artemis had trouble sharing anything with me. Demigods, arrows, nations, birthday parties. It's a twin thing. Also, Meg McCaffrey did not strike me as one of my sister's followers. Meg had another sort of aura. One I would have been able to recognize easily if I were a god. But no. I had to rely on mortal intuition, which was like trying to pick up sewing needles while wearing oven mitts. Meg turned and gazed out the rear windshield, probably checking for any shiny blobs pursuing us.
At least we're not being...
Don't say it, Percy warned. Meg huffed.
You don't know what I was going to...
You were going to say, at least we're not being followed, Percy said. That'll jinx us. Immediately we'll notice that we are being followed, then we'll end up in a big battle that totals my family car and probably destroys the whole freeway. Then we'll have to run all the way to camp.
Meg's eyes widened. You can tell the future?
Don't need to. Percy changed lanes to one that was crawling slightly less slowly. I've just done this a lot. Besides, he shot me an accusing look, nobody can tell the future anymore. The oracle isn't working.
What oracle? Meg asked.
Neither of us answered. For a moment, I was too stunned to speak. And believe me, I have to be very stunned for that to happen.
It still isn't working? I said in a small voice. You didn't know?
Percy asked. I mean, sure, you've been out of it for 6 months, but this happened on your watch. That was unjust. I had been busy hiding from Zeus's wrath at the time, which was a perfectly legitimate excuse. How was I to know that Gia would take advantage of the chaos of war and raise my oldest, greatest enemy from the depths of Tartarus so he could take possession of his old lair in the cave of Delphi and cut off the source of my prophetic power? Oh, yes. I hear you critics out there. You're the god of prophecy, Apollo. How could you not know that would happen? The next sound you hear will be me blowing you a giant Meg McCaffrey-quality raspberry. I swallowed back the taste of fear and seven-layer dip. I assumed. I hoped this would be taken care of by now.
You mean by demigods? Percy said. Going on a big quest to reclaim the Oracle of Delphi?
Exactly. I knew Percy would understand. I suppose Chiron just forgot. I'll remind him when we get to camp. And he can dispatch some of you talented fodder. I mean, heroes.
Well, here's the thing, Percy said. To go on a quest, we need a prophecy, right? Those are the rules. If there's no oracle, there are no prophecies. So we're stuck in a
catch-88, I sighed. Meg threw a piece of lint at me.
It's a catch-22.
No, I explained patiently. This is a catch-88, which is four times as bad. I felt as if I were floating in a warm bath and someone had pulled out the stopper. The water swirled around me, tugging me downward. Soon I would be left shivering and exposed, or else I would be sucked down the drain into the sewers of hopelessness. Don't laugh. That's a perfectly fine metaphor. Also, when you're a god, you can get sucked down a drain quite easily, if you're caught off guard and relaxed, and you happen to change form at the wrong moment. Once I woke up in a sewage treatment facility in Biloxi, but that's another story. I was beginning to see what was in store for me during my mortal sojourn. The oracle was held by hostile forces. My adversary lay coiled and waiting, growing stronger every day on the magical fumes of the Delphic caverns. And I was a weak mortal, bound to an untrained demigod who threw garbage and chewed her cuticles. No. Zeus could not possibly expect me to fix this. Not in my present condition. And yet, someone had sent those thugs to intercept me in the alley. Someone had known where I would land. Nobody can tell the future anymore, Percy had said. But that wasn't quite true.
Hey, you two!
Meg hit us both with pieces of lint. Where was she finding this lint?
I realized I'd been ignoring her. It had felt good while it lasted.
Yes, sorry, Meg, I said.
You see, the Oracle of Delphi is an ancient...
I don't care about that, she said. There are three shiny blobs now.
What? Percy asked. She pointed behind us.
Look!
Weaving through the traffic, closing in on us rapidly, were three glittery, vaguely humanoid apparitions. Like billowing plumes from smoke grenades touched by King Midas.
Just once I'd like an easy commute, Percy grumbled.
Everybody, hold on. We're going cross-country. Percy's definition of cross-country was different from mine. I envisioned crossing an actual countryside. Instead, Percy shot down the nearest exit ramp, wove across the parking lot of a shopping mall, then blasted through the drive-thru of a Mexican restaurant, without even ordering anything. We swerved into an industrial area of dilapidated warehouses, the smoking apparitions still closing in behind us.
My knuckles turned white on my seatbelt shoulder strap.
Is your plan to avoid a fight by dying in a traffic accident? I demanded.
Ha ha!
Percy yanked the wheel to the right. We sped north, the warehouses giving way to a hodgepodge of apartment buildings and abandoned strip malls. I'm getting us to the beach. I fight better near water.
Because Poseidon? Meg asked, steadying herself against the door handle.
Yep, Percy agreed. That pretty much describes my entire life. Because Poseidon. Meg bounced up and down with excitement, which seemed pointless to me, since we were already bouncing quite a lot.
You're gonna be like Aquaman? She asked. Get the fish to fight for you?
Thanks, Percy said. I haven't heard enough Aquaman jokes for one lifetime.
I wasn't joking, Meg protested.
I glanced out the rear window. The three glittering plumes were still gaining. One of them passed through a middle-aged man crossing the street. The mortal pedestrian instantly collapsed.
Ah, I know these spirits, I cried. They are...
My brain clouded over.
What? Percy demanded. They are what?
I've forgotten. I hate being mortal. 4,000 years of knowledge, the secrets of the universe, a sea of wisdom, lost, because I can't contain it all in this teacup of a head.
Hold on!
Percy flew through a railroad crossing, and the Prius went airborne. Meg yelped as her head hit the ceiling. Then she began giggling uncontrollably. The landscape opened into actual countryside. Fallow fields, dormant vineyards, orchards of bare fruit trees.
Just another mile or so to the beach, Percy said.
Plus, we're almost to the western edge of camp.
We can do it. We can do it!
Actually, we couldn't. One of the shiny smoke clouds pulled a dirty trick, pluming from the pavement directly in front of us. Instinctively, Percy swerved. The Prius went off the road, straight through a barbed wire fence and into an orchard. Percy managed to avoid hitting any of the trees, but the car skidded in the icy mud and wedged itself between two trunks. Miraculously, the airbags did not deploy. Percy popped his seatbelt.
You guys okay?
Meg shoved against her passenger side door.
Won't open! Get me out of here!
Percy tried his own door. It was firmly jammed against the side of a peach tree.
Back here, I said. Climb over!
I kicked my door open and staggered out, my legs feeling like worn shock absorbers. The three smoky figures had stopped at the edge of the orchard. Now they advanced slowly, taking on solid shapes. They grew arms and legs. Their faces formed eyes and wide, hungry mouths. I knew instinctively that I had dealt with these spirits before. I couldn't remember what they were, but I had dispelled them many times.
swatting them into oblivion with no more effort than I would a swarm of gnats. Unfortunately, I wasn't a god now. I was a panicky 16-year-old. My palms sweated. My teeth chattered. My only coherent thought was, yikes! Percy and Meg struggled to get out of the Prius. They needed time, which meant I had to run interference.
Stop! I bellowed at the spirits. I am the god Apollo!
To my pleasant surprise, the three spirits stopped. They hovered in place about 40 feet away. I heard Meg grunt as she tumbled out of the back seat. Percy scrambled after her. I advanced toward the spirits, the frosty mud crunching under my shoes. My breath steamed in the cold air. I raised my hand in an ancient three-fingered gesture for warding off evil.
Leave us or be destroyed,
I told the spirits.
Blofus!
The smoky shapes trembled. My hopes lifted. I waited for them to dissipate or flee in terror. Instead, they solidified into ghoulish corpses with yellow eyes. Their clothes were tattered rags, their limbs covered with gaping wounds and running sores. Oh dear. My Adam's apple dropped into my chest like a billiard ball. I remember now. Percy and Meg stepped to either side of me. With a metallic chink, Percy's pen grew into a blade of glowing celestial bronze. Remember what? He asked. How to kill these things?
No, I said. I remember what they are.
Nosoi.
Plague spirits.
Also,
they can't be killed. Chapter 7. Tag with Plague Spirits. You're it, and you're infectious. Have fun with that. LOL.
Nosoi?
Percy planted his feet in a fighting stance.
You know, I keep thinking, I have now killed every single thing in Greek mythology, but the list never seems to end.
You haven't killed me yet, I noted.
Don't tempt me.
The three Nosoi shuffled forward. Their cadaverous mouths gaped. Their tongues lolled. Their eyes glistened with a film of yellow mucus. These creatures are not myths, I said. Of course, most things in those old myths are not myths. Except for that story about how I flayed the satyr Marcius alive. That was a total lie. Percy glanced at me.
You did what?
Guys?
Meg picked up a dead tree branch.
Could we talk about that later?
The middle plague spirit spoke.
Apollo.
His voice gurgled like a seal with bronchitis.
We have come to...
Let me stop you right there. I crossed my arms and feigned arrogant indifference. Difficult for me, but I managed.
You've come to take your revenge on me, eh?
I looked at my demigod friends.
You see, Nosoi are the spirits of disease. Once I was born, spreading illnesses became part of my job. I use plague arrows to strike down naughty populations with smallpox, athlete's foot, that sort of thing.
Gross, Meg said.
Somebody's gotta do it, I said.
Better a god, regulated by the Council of Olympus, and with the proper health permits, than a horde of uncontrolled spirits like these.
The spirit on the left gurgled.
We're trying to have a moment here. Stop interrupting. We wish to be free. Uncontrolled.
Yes, I know. You'll destroy me, then you'll spread every known malady across the world. You've been wanting to do that ever since Pandora let you out of that jar.
But you can't. I will strike you down. Perhaps you are wondering how I could act so confident and calm. In fact, I was terrified. My 16-year-old mortal instincts were screaming, run! My knees were knocking together, and my right eye had developed a nasty twitch. But the secret to dealing with plague spirits was to keep talking, so as to appear in charge and unafraid. I trusted that this would allow my demigod companions time to come up with a clever plan to save me. I certainly hoped Meg and Percy were working on such a plan. The spirit on the right bared his rotten teeth.
What will you strike us down with? Where is your bow?
It appears to be missing, I agreed. But is it really? What if it's cleverly hidden under this Led Zeppelin t-shirt, and I'm about to whip it out and shoot you all? The Nosoi shuffled nervously.
You lie,
said the one in the middle. Percy cleared his throat. Hey, Apollo? Finally, I thought. I know what you're going to say, I told him. You and Meg have come up with a clever plan to hold off these spirits while I run away to camp. I hate to see you sacrifice yourselves, but... That's not what I was going to say. Percy raised his blade. I was going to ask what happens if I just slice and dice these mouth breathers with celestial bronze. The middle spirit chortled, his yellow eyes gleaming.
A sword is such a small weapon. It does not have the poetry of a good epidemic.
Stop right there, I said. You can't claim both my plagues and my poetry.
You are right, said the spirit. Enough words.
The three corpses shambled forward. I thrust out my arms, hoping to blast them to dust. Nothing happened. This is insufferable, I complained. How do demigods do it without an auto-wind power? Meg jabbed her tree branch into the nearest spirit's chest. The branch stuck. Glittering smoke began swirling down the length of the wood. Let go, I warned. Don't let the Nosoi touch you! Meg released the branch and scampered away. Meanwhile, Percy Jackson charged into battle. He swung his sword, dodging the spirit's attempts to snare him. But his efforts were futile. Whenever his blade connected with the Nosoi, their bodies simply dissolved into glittery mist, then re-solidified. A spirit lunged to grab him. From the ground, Meg scooped up a frozen black peach and threw it with such force it embedded itself in the spirit's forehead, knocking him down.
We gotta run, Meg decided.
Yeah, Percy backtracked toward us. I like that idea. I knew running would not help. If it were possible to run from disease spirits, the medieval Europeans would have put on their track shoes and escaped the Black Death. And, FYI, the Black Death was not my fault. I took one century off to lie around the beach in Cabo, and came back and found that the Nosoi had gotten loose, and a third of the continent was dead. Gods, I was so irritated. But I was too terrified to argue. Meg and Percy sprinted off through the orchard, and I followed. Percy pointed to a line of hills about a mile ahead.
That's the western border of camp. If we can just get there.
We passed an irrigation tank on a tractor trailer. With a casual flick of his hand, Percy caused the side of the tank to rupture. A wall of water crashed into the three Nosoi behind us.
That was good,
Meg grinned, skipping along in her new green dress.
We're going to make it.
No, I thought. We're not. My chest ached. Each breath was a ragged wheeze. I resented that these two demigods could carry on a conversation while running for their lives, while I, the immortal Apollo, was reduced to gasping like a catfish.
We can't, I gulped. They'll just...
Before I could finish, three glittering pillars of smoke plumed from the ground in front of us. Two of the Nosoi solidified into cadavers, one with a peach for a third eye, the other with a tree branch sticking out of his chest. The third spirit. Well, Percy didn't see it in time. He ran straight into the plume of smoke.
Don't breathe,
I warned him.
Percy's eyes bugged out as if to say, seriously?
He fell to his knees, clawing at his throat. As a son of Poseidon, he could probably breathe underwater, but holding one's breath for an indeterminate amount of time was a different matter altogether. Meg picked up another withered peach from the field, but it would offer her little defense against the forces of darkness. I tried to figure out how to help Percy, because I am all about helping. But the branch impaled Knossos charged at me. I turned and fled, running face first into a tree. I'd like to tell you that was part of my plan, but even I, with all my poetic skill, cannot put a positive spin on it. I found myself flat on my back, spots dancing in my eyes, the cadaverous visage of the plague spirit looming over me.
Which fatal illness shall I use to kill the great Apollo?
The spirit gurgled.
Anthrax, perhaps Ebola.
Hangnails, I suggested, trying to squirm away from my tormentor. I live in fear of hangnails.
I have the answer,
the spirit cried, rudely ignoring me.
Let's try this.
He dissolved into smoke and settled over me like a glittering blanket. Chapter 8 Peaches in Combat. I am hanging it up now. My brain exploded. I will not say my life passed before my eyes. I wish it had. That would have taken several months, giving me time to figure out an escape plan. Instead, my regrets passed before my eyes. Despite being a gloriously perfect being, I do have a few regrets. I remembered that day at Abbey Road Studios, when my envy led me to set rancor in the hearts of John and Paul and break up the Beatles. I remembered Achilles falling on the plains of Troy, cut down by an unworthy archer because of my wrath. I saw Hyacinthus, his bronze shoulders and dark ringlets gleaming in the sunlight. Standing on the sideline of the discus field, he gave me a brilliant smile. Even you can't throw that far, he teased. Watch me, I said. I threw the discus, then stared in horror as a gust of wind made it veer inexplicably toward Hyacinthus's handsome face. And of course I saw her, the other love of my life, her fair skin transforming into bark, her hair sprouting green leaves, her eyes hardening into rivulets of sap. Those memories brought back so much pain. You might think I would welcome the glittering plague mist descending over me. Yet my new mortal self rebelled. I was too young to die. I hadn't even had my first kiss. Yes, my godly catalog of exes was filled with more beautiful people than a Kardashian party guest list. But none of that seemed real to me. If I'm being totally honest, I have to confess something else. All gods fear death, even when we are not encased in mortal forms. That may seem silly. We are immortal. But as you've seen, immortality can be taken away. In my case, 3 stinking times. Gods know about fading. They know about being forgotten over the centuries. The idea of ceasing to exist altogether terrifies us. In fact, well, Zeus would not like me sharing this information, and if you tell anyone, I will deny I ever said it. But the truth is, we gods are a little in awe of you mortals. You spend your whole lives knowing you will die. No matter how many friends and relatives you have, your puny existence will quickly be forgotten. How do you cope with it? Why are you not running around constantly screaming and pulling your hair out? Your bravery, I must admit, is quite admirable. No, where was I? Right. I was dying. I rolled around in the mud, holding my breath.
I tried to brush off the disease cloud, but it was not as easy as swatting a fly or an uppity mortal. I caught a glimpse of Meg, playing a deadly game of tag with the third Gnosos, trying to keep a peach tree between herself and the spirit. She yelled something to me, but her voice seemed tinny and far away. Somewhere to my left, the ground shook. A miniature geyser erupted from the field. Percy crawled toward it desperately. He thrust his face in the water, washing away the smoke. My eyesight began to dim. Percy struggled to his feet. He ripped out the source of the geyser, an irrigation pipe, and turned the water on me. Normally, I do not like being doused. Every time I go camping with Artemis, she likes to wake me up with a bucket of ice-cold water. But in this case, I didn't mind. The water disrupted the smoke, allowing me to roll away and gasp for air. Nearby, our two gaseous enemies reformed as dripping wet corpses, their yellow eyes glowing with annoyance. Meg yelled again. This time, I understood her words.
Get down!
I found this inconsiderate, since I'd only just gotten up. All around the orchard, the frozen, blackened remnants of the harvest were beginning to levitate. Believe me, in 4,000 years, I have seen some strange things. I have seen the dreaming face of Uranos etched in stars across the heavens, and the full fury of Typhon as he raged across the earth. I've seen men turn into snakes, ants turn into men, and otherwise rational people dance the Macarena. But never before had I seen an uprising of frozen fruit. Percy and I hit the ground as peaches shot around the orchard, ricocheting off trees like eight balls, ripping through the Gnosoi's cadaverous bodies. If I had been standing up, I would have been killed. But Meg simply stood there, unfazed and unhurt, as frozen dead fruit zinged around her. All three Gnosoi collapsed, riddled with holes. Every piece of fruit dropped to the ground. Percy looked up, his eyes red and puffy.
What just happened?
He sounded congested, which meant he hadn't completely escaped the effects of the plague cloud, but at least he wasn't dead. That was generally a good sign. I don't know, I admitted. Meg? Is it safe? She was staring in amazement at the carnage of fruit, mangled corpses, and broken tree limbs.
I'm not sure.
How'd you do that?
Percy snuffled. Meg looked horrified.
I didn't. I just knew it would happen.
One of the cadavers began to stir. It got up, wobbling on its heavily perforated legs.
But you did do it,
the spirit growled.
You are strong, child.
The other two corpses rose.
Not strong enough, said the second Gnosos. We will finish you now.
The third spirit bared his rotten teeth.
Your guardian would be so disappointed.
Guardian? Perhaps the spirit meant me. When in doubt, I usually assumed the conversation was about me. Meg looked as if she'd been punched in the gut. Her face paled. Her arms trembled. She stamped her foot and yelled,
No!
More peaches swirled into the air. This time, the fruit blurred together in a fructose dust devil, until standing in front of Meg was a creature like a pudgy human toddler, wearing only a linen diaper. Protruding from his back were wings made of leafy branches. His babyish face might have been cute, except for the glowing green eyes and pointy fangs. The creature snarled and snapped at the air.
Oh, no, Percy shook his head. I hate these things.
The three Gnosoi also did not look pleased. They edged away from the snarling baby.
What is it?
Meg asked. I stared at her in disbelief. She had to be the cause of this fruit-based strangeness, but she looked as shocked as we were. Unfortunately, if Meg didn't know how she had summoned this creature, she would not know how to make it go away. And like Percy Jackson, I was no fan of Carpoy. "It's a grain spirit," I said, trying to keep the panic out of my voice. "I've never seen a peach carpost before, but if it's as vicious as other types..." I was about to say we're doomed, but that seemed both obvious and depressing. The peach baby turned toward the Nosoi. For a moment, I feared he would make some hellish alliance, an axis of evil between illnesses and fruits. The middle corpse, the one with the peach in his forehead, inched backward.
"Do not interfere," he warned the Carpos. "We will not allow."
The peach baby launched himself at the Nosos and bit his head off. That is not a figure of speech. The Carpos's fanged mouth unhinged, expanding to an unbelievable circumference, then closed around the cadaver's head and chomped it off in one bite. Oh dear. I hope you weren't eating dinner as you read that. In a matter of seconds, the Nosos had been torn to shreds and devoured. Understandably, the other two Nosoi retreated. But the Carpos crouched and sprang. He landed on the second corpse and proceeded to rip it into plague-flavored cream of wheat. The last spirit dissolved into glittering smoke and tried to fly away, but the peach baby spread his leafy wings and launched himself in pursuit. He opened his mouth and inhaled the sickness, snapping and swallowing until every wisp of smoke was gone. He landed in front of Meg and belched. His green eyes gleamed. He did not appear even slightly sick, which I suppose wasn't surprising since human diseases don't infect fruit trees. Instead, even after eating three whole Nosoi, the little fellow looked hungry. He howled and beat his small chest.
"Peaches!"
Slowly, Percy raised his sword. His nose was still red and runny, and his face was puffy.
"Meg, don't move," he snuffled. "I'm gonna..."
"No," she said. "Don't hurt him."
She put her hand tentatively on the creature's curly head.
"You saved us," she told the Carpos. "Thank you."
I started mentally preparing a list of herbal remedies for regenerating severed limbs, but to my surprise, the peach baby did not bite off Meg's hand. Instead, he hugged Meg's leg and glared at us as if daring us to approach.
"Peaches,"
he growled.
"He likes you," Percy noted.
Why?
"I don't know," Meg said. "Honestly, I didn't summon him."
I was certain Meg had summoned him, intentionally or unintentionally. I also had some ideas now about her godly parentage, and some questions about this guardian that the spirits had mentioned. But I decided it would be better to interrogate her when she did not have a snarling, carnivorous toddler wrapped around her leg.
"Well, whatever the case," I said, "we owe the Carpos our lives."
This brings to mind an expression I coined ages ago. "A peach a day keeps the plague spirits away." Percy sneezed.
"I thought it was apples and doctors."
The Carpos hissed.
"Or peaches," Percy said. "Peaches work, too."
"Peaches,"
agreed the Carpos. Percy wiped his nose.
"Not criticizing, but why is he grooting?"
Meg frowned.
"Grooting?"
"Yeah, like the character of the movie? Only saying one thing over and over?"
"I'm afraid I haven't seen that movie," I said. "But this Carpos does seem to have a very targeted vocabulary."
"Maybe Peaches is his name."
Meg stroked the Carpos's curly brown hair, which elicited a demonic purring from the creature's throat.
That's what I'll call him.
Whoa, you are not adopting that.
Percy sneezed with such force, another irrigation pipe exploded behind him, sending up a row of tiny geysers.
Ugh, sick.
You're lucky, I said. Your trick with the water diluted the spirit's power. Instead of getting a deadly illness, you got a head cold.
I hate head colds.
His green irises looked like they were sinking in a sea of bloodshot.
Neither of you got sick?
Meg shook her head. I have an excellent constitution, I said. No doubt that's what saved me.
And the fact that I hosed the smoke off of you, Percy said.
Well, yes. Percy stared at me as if waiting for something. After an awkward moment, it occurred to me that if he was a god and I was a worshipper, he might expect gratitude.
Ah! Thank you, I said.
He nodded.
No problem.
I relaxed a little. If he had demanded a sacrifice, like a white bull or a fatted calf, I'm not sure what I would have done.
Can we go now?
Meg asked.
An excellent idea, I said.
Though I'm afraid Percy is in no condition.
I could drive you the rest of the way, he said. If we can get my car out from between those trees.
He glanced in that direction, and his expression turned even more miserable.
Ah, Hades, no.
A police cruiser was pulling over on the side of the road. I imagined the officer's eyes tracing the tire ruts in the mud, which led to the plowed-down fence and continued to the blue Toyota Prius, wedged between two peach trees. The cruiser's roof lights flashed on.
Great, Percy muttered. If they tow the Prius, I'm dead. My mom and Paul need that car.
Go talk to the officers, I said. You won't be any use to us anyway in your current state.
Yeah, we'll be fine, Meg said. You said the camp is right over those hills?
Right, but...
Percy scowled, probably trying to think straight through the effects of his cold.
Most people enter camp from the east, where Half-Blood Hill is. The western border is wilder. Hills and woods, all heavily enchanted. If you're not careful, you could get lost.
He sneezed again.
I'm still not even sure Apollo could get in if he's fully mortal. I'll get in.
I tried to exude confidence. I had no alternative. If I was unable to enter Camp Half-Blood... No. I'd already been attacked twice on my first day as a mortal. There was no plan B that would keep me alive. The police car's doors opened.
Go, I urged Percy.
We'll find our way through the woods. You explain to the police that you're sick and you lost control of the car. They'll go easy on you. Percy laughed.
Yeah, cops love me almost as much as teachers do.
He glanced at Meg.
You sure you're okay with the baby fruit demon?
Peaches growled.
All good, Meg promised. Go home. Rest. Get lots of fluids.
Percy's mouth twitched.
You're telling a son of Poseidon to get lots of fluids. Okay, just try to survive until the weekend, will you? I'll come to camp and check on you guys if I can. Be careful and... Chew!
Muttering unhappily, he touched the cap of his pen to his sword, turning it back into a simple ballpoint. A wise precaution before approaching law enforcement. He trudged down the hill, sneezing and sniffling.
Officer, he called. Sorry, I'm up here. Can you tell me where Manhattan is?
Meg turned to me.
Ready?
I was soaking wet and shivering. I was having the worst day in the history of days. I was stuck with a scary girl and an even scarier peach baby. I was by no means ready for anything. But I also desperately wanted to reach camp. I might find some friendly faces there. Perhaps even jubilant worshippers who would bring me peeled grapes, Oreos,
and other holy offerings.
Sure, I said. Let's go.
Peaches the Carpost grunted.